Let's call this meeting of the House Judiciary Committee to order. It is 5:16 p.m. It's Tuesday, April 16. Before we begin, I want to thank Robert Montenegro, the House Judiciary Secretary, and make sure we have a transcript of our meetings, and Madison Truitt from the Juneau LIO, who makes sure we have sound. This time, I want to remind committee members and those in the room to please silence your cell phones. Present today, Representative Eastman, Representative Kopp, who I know is tying his tie and appearing momentarily, Representative Shaw, Representative Ledoux, my vice chair, and Representative Klayman, myself. We have a quorum to conduct business. Our first and only order of business today is House Bill 14, Assault, Sex Offenses, Sentence Aggravators, sponsored by Representative Lincoln. This is the third hearing of the bill in the Judiciary Committee. At this time, I would like to take up amendments to House Bill 14, and I'll put on the record that Legislative Legal has permission to make any technical and conforming changes to the bill. To provide a brief recap, yesterday we took up and adopted Amendment Number 1, and today we're beginning with Amendment Number 2. Could I have a motion to move Amendment Number 2?
Mr. Chairman, I move Amendment Number 2.
Object.
And since the sponsor of the bill requested Amendment Number 2, I'll ask the bill sponsor or his staff to explain Amendment Number 2. Or both of you. And I just let the committee know for planning purposes that I actually have to disappear from meeting at 5:30 to 6, so if we don't finish by 5:30, we'll recess to the call of the chair and come back after 6. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Member of the committees, for the record, Rose Foley, staff to Representative Lincoln. The amendment before you is the result of consultation with advocacy and survivor groups, including the Alaska Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault. Our office understands the desire to strengthen victim notification requirements, and we appreciate the committee's patience while we crafted appropriate language. The first change appears on page 1, line 11, and adds that victims of all sex offenses are provided the rights laid out in Title 12, Chapter 61. This provides the same notifications that are already afforded to victims of felonies and domestic violence offenses. The next change begins on page 2, line 7, and strengthens the existing victim notification requirements. It also requires the attorney to record whether the victim or the victim's guardian is in support of the proposed plea agreement. Finally, section 6, beginning on page 2, line 19, adds new language that provides that a court can reschedule a plea hearing to allow additional time for the prosecutor to comply with the victim notification requirements.
I'd recognize that Representative Wool has joined us. Please continue.
Thank you. Subsection E clarifies that a victim is in no way required to provide a response to an attorney regarding the plea agreement.
Thank you very much. Questions about the amendment? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now, Section 6, what is the effect of that? Is there a particular amount of time that they can delay a hearing by?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, it's my understanding that would be at the court's discretion, whatever they felt was required to allow the prosecutor to comply with the notification requirements.
And follow-up?
Representative Eastman.
And is this going to be in tension or conflict with a defendant's right to a speedy trial?
Representative Eastman, through the chair, it is my understanding that it would not.
Okay.
Any other questions about Amendment Number 2? Representative Ledoux.
So I've got two questions. First of all, what sex offenses would not be included in the way the statute reads right now is a felony or a crime involving domestic violence. So what sex offenses wouldn't be a felony and so would be covered by this bill now?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, there are misdemeanor sex offenses that would not currently be covered under this statute, and those include sexual assault of a minor in the fourth, sexual assault four, attempted sexual abuse of a minor, or sexual assault in the third.
Thank
and
you.
Certain juvenile on juvenile sex crimes.
Okay, and then one more thing. So why wouldn't this possibly interfere with a constitutional right for a speedy trial?
Representative Ledoux, through the chair, I can't answer that conclusively, but I believe it's part of the balancing act, balancing the victim's right to notification and the defendant's right to a speedy trial. We could probably get an answer from
Ms. Schroeder back there.
Welcome.
For the record, Casey Schroeder, Assistant Attorney General for the Criminal Division at the Department of Law. Through the chair, Representative Ledoux, the delay that we're talking about here is only typically a day or two. It is just enough time for the prosecution to call the victim and confer about the plea agreement. And just to clarify, we're talking about them entering into a plea agreement. So the hearing that we're talking about here is a change of plea hearing where they intend to plead guilty. And of course, that would negate the need for a trial.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Representative Eastman.
Thank you, through the chair. Now, is the intent of this amendment to include not only sex offenses but also attempted offenses?
Through the chair, Representative Eastman, it's all felonies, all sex offenses, and crimes involving domestic violence. So an attempt would fall under that classification.
Okay, thank you.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Through the chair, so conferring with the victim or victim's legal guardian, is this a standard concept? I'm not familiar with this. And about a plea agreement to get the to confer with the victim, and what if they don't agree?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, conferring with the victim is a requirement under current law. It is something we do as standard practice before we enter into a plea agreement. We do call the victim and discuss the plea agreement with them, and we talk about the legal parameters so they understand the landscape in which the agreement has been proposed. If the victim does not agree and wishes for that to be expressed to the court, the victim has options of either notifying the court on their own. They can do it in writing or appear at the hearing and talk orally do it, or they can ask us to pass on their thoughts, and the prosecutors often do that. That's just part of our job.
Thank you. Follow up.
Representative Wohl.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. is this for only certain categories of crime about the conferring with the victim?
Through the chair, Representative Wohl, the law requires us to do it for all felonies, and then this amendment would require all sex offenses, although that is what we do as standard practice anyway, and then all crimes of domestic violence. In practice, the only crimes where we don't necessarily confer with the victim would be very low level, like B misdemeanor theft type of situations, and that's just because of a resource issue.
Thank you.
I don't see any other questions. Is the objection maintained?
I have a question, not for the witness, for the committee.
Go ahead.
I was just curious. I noticed that
actually, does this relate to whether you're maintaining your objection or not?
Yes, it does.
Go ahead.
I was just wondering about the process for this amendment coming to us. Because it's a little irregular to have a non-committee member's name on the amendment. And did it submitted to the committee before the deadline?
Representative Eastman, actually, that was explained at the last hearing. I'll repeat it very briefly, that this was received in a timely manner, and because there were questions that I, as chair, had with the amendment, I thought it was, rather than take up the amendment as submitted, I thought it made more sense to work with the maker of the amendment to make it in a form that would probably be more acceptable to the committee, and so I took the time as chair to let them work on their amendment, and that's exactly what we did. It's been a routine practice, I think, in all committees for a sponsor of a bill to be able to present amendments, but it has to be a member of the committee that moves the amendment. So that's
Thank
how
you.
This worked. Do you maintain your objection?
No.
Is there any other objection to amendment number two? Hearing and seeing none, amendment number two is adopted. That brings us to the bill back before the committee in the interest of trying to get out today before 5:30. I will take final comments and ask people to limit their comments on House Bill 14 to 1 minute. Anyone want to make comments on House Bill 14? Representative Kopp, go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to thank Representative Lincoln for bringing this bill forward to address an unfortunate loophole in the law, addressing both a use of force issue that covers strangling someone to unconsciousness and the unwanted contact with ejaculate. It's amazing the loopholes that can be in our criminal law for decades, and unfortunate situation came forward that uncovered that, and thank Representative Lincoln for addressing it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you very much. Seeing no other comments, I have nothing. Representative Eastman, go ahead.
Thank you. And my comment is simply that, you know, I know we had discussed yesterday some amendments, and we hadn't been able to figure out how to effectively reconcile some of the conflicting language, and I think it's probably worth our time to do so.
Thank you, Representative Eastman. May I have a motion?
Yes, I move version 31-LSO182/G of HB 14 as amended with individual recommendations and attached fiscal notes.
Object.
Let's call the roll.
Representative Stutes, not present. Representative Ledoux.
Yes.
Representative Wolf.
Yes.
Representative Eastman.
No.
Representative Shaw.
Yes.
Representative Kopp.
Yes.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, that's 5 yeas, 1 nay.
So by a vote of 5-1, House Bill 14 moves from committee. I would ask all members of the committee to stay here and get the paperwork signed after we adjourn, and we will now adjourn for the day. Our next meeting is currently scheduled for tomorrow, Wednesday, April 17 at 1 p.m. I recognize in light of the joint session that this will either likely get continued to the call of the chair or canceled, but we'll see where we are tomorrow morning. With that, we will adjourn. It is now 5:28 p.m.